Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Cyber Society podcast. Let's face it, the future is now. We're living in a connected cyber society, and we need to stop ignoring it or pretending that it's not affecting us. Join us as we explore how humanity arrived at this current state of digital reality and what it means to live amongst so much technology and data. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
And here we go. This is the podcast here on ITSP Magazine. This is Sean Martin, and today we're looking at the experience of living and creating a world for ourselves in our homes and in our buildings and in our societies, leveraging technologies to take us where we think we want to go. And there's a lot we can talk about here, and we'll figure out where we actually end up. And to have this conversation, I'm pleased to have Todd Boucher. He's the principal and founder at Leading Edge Design Group. And we're going to get into some fun stuff. Todd, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Sean. Excited to be here. Appreciate the chance to chat with you.
Yeah, this is fun. Anyway, something I've been thinking about for a while, and we finally got it on the books. Very briefly, a bit about yourself and your role and the work you do so people have a sense of your perspective on this topic.
Sure. Yeah, so again, my name is Todd Boucher. I'm the principal and founder at Leading Edge Design Group. And our job at Leading Edge Design Group is to design smart buildings. And what that means for us is thinking about how technology plays a role in delivering an experience to occupants or operators or community inside of the built environment, and how to make that experience engaging, how to make it efficient on the back end, how to make it cost effective. And we're excited to be part of a really, you know, expanding and market that's evolving really quickly. So
it's a fascinating space. And as we were talking about earlier, I kind of cut my teeth in technology at a construction company. It was right. Landscape construction, but nonetheless, kind of figuring out why are you building something a certain way? And I think what we want to do today is kind of connect the dots between you build something for a reason. Do the people want that reason? Is it just because the technology makes it possible? Or is there some specific point that we're trying to reach by building a smart building? Is it health? Is it efficiency, expediency, economics, safety, sustainability? I don't know. I'm listing a bunch of things here, but what do you see as kind of the drivers behind why smart buildings are a thing
these days? Yeah, great question, Sean. I think it's an important question because there's a lot of confusion, you know, in the market about what the definition of a smart building is and what the value it can provide to an owner or to occupants or to community is. I think there are two main driving factors that should be considered when you're thinking about smart buildings. And those are building performance and occupant experience. And they are broad categories specifically because there are a lot of key elements that you just described that fall into those two buckets. You know, building performance is sustainability, it is energy efficiency, it's operational efficiency. occupant experience is what we think of as users and that connected experience. It's a health and wellness based experience. It's safe, you know, and secure. With all of those things in both of those buckets. But what's exciting about smart buildings, I think, is that if you look historically at the built environment, the performance of the facility and the experience of the occupants are typically diametrically opposed. So if you're giving more agency to the occupants, you're often compromising the performance of the building in the process. And that's a real challenge for owners and operators. And so I think why smart buildings are really exciting beyond what we think about in the technology space and the experience with technology. It also is exciting because it can provide value to both sides of that stakeholder equation at the same time. So you can actually accomplish building performance optimization and create engaging occupant experiences without sacrificing one to do the other. And I think that's what I think sort of ignites the promise of a smart building in the space right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm a user and not a maintenance person at a building, but when I think about smart buildings, I'm thinking about my experience, right?
Yeah.
Either as an owner resident or as a guest, perhaps even. But there's a lot to make a building run. And you said those two worlds may or may not find a nice mix to both grow and benefit at the same time. And so what I'm wondering is, what are some of the things that you're seeing turned smart? And maybe with that, if you can kind of explain, is it taking, here's what we know what a building looks like and how it works and making it smart? Or is it throwing everything away and saying, we have a clean slate, what's the experience we want to arrive at or deliver? And how do we make that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sean. I'm going to answer both parts of it, but in the inverse order, because I think the second point that you made is the most critical point of the sort of planning process around smart buildings. And that is that if you want to create a smart building, the first area of focus should be on identifying the type of experience that you want to deliver for the property stakeholders. Now, most often we think about occupants, and that certainly is, you know, a key stakeholder group. But we also have operators. You might have, you know, community or municipalities, and even ownership. But starting with defining sort of the vision for what that experience should be is the best way to identify the tools and technology assets and infrastructure that can best deliver that. And I'm putting emphasis on this because what we find is that people's tendency, and understandably so, is to start looking at technology first. And I think that's where you started your question is, do we take all the stuff we already have in buildings and just make it smart? I think the tendency when people have an opportunity to do something new or do a renovation is to just immediately start looking at technologies and evaluating what capabilities do they have to become advanced or become smart. And doing that without being rooted in the type of experience that you want to deliver leads to this really fragmented set of technologies. And from your background in, you know, software development, you know that without that cohesion, you know, and being rooted in the foundation of what you're trying to build and the experience you want to deliver, then you really lose sight as you're evaluating these different building technologies. So what's exciting, I think, in the market is that the availability of technology is just, you know, proliferating so rapidly. So the ability to solve problems or, you know, provide value on specific use cases that owners are thinking about when they think about smart buildings, that technology is there. Doing it well, though, I think requires starting exactly where you said, Sean, which is, what do we want? You know, the digital experience is a key component to how an occupant will experience this building. What do we want that to be like? let's do the work to identify that first. Then it's easier to figure out what type of systems or technologies can deliver that experience. And so I think it's really important that you work the process in that order, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I'm wondering if you can give us a peek into how you operate with respect to that process. So in the software world, it's user stories or use cases and a few of them together to build a bigger picture, perhaps. I'm wondering, is it the same for a group like yourself? And is that the traditional model for designers and builders, or is that a shift in how they have to think?
Yeah, great question, John. I think there's a lot to be learned in the design and construction industry, especially around smart buildings, in how software development is done, in exactly what you're describing. So what's exciting about smart buildings, and in order, you know, in my opinion, to really recognize the full value of a smart building, we have to sort of transition both our thinking and how we use the technology from it being a utility to being something of significance. And, you know, to do that, we have to sort of move away from the model that we most often think about from a design standpoint, which is this, you know, cause and effect sort of approach to problem solving. So I have a problem, I need a specific technology to fill this problem or use case. And then we look for the shortest path to, you know, find a solution to that problem. So it's very linear. And in smart buildings, as you're describing in software development, you know, the value of smart buildings is really derived by the interconnectedness of all the systems. So the first piece for us is really to help owners understand that this process, undertaking this plan for smart buildings, requires systems thinking. You know, this is an ecosystem of interconnected parts. And we have to think about it that way if we want to unlock the full value of what this real estate asset will be. And where I think we can really learn from software development, and you hit on some of these key points, is that instead of thinking about technology like utility, so example of that would be, I have a conference room. In a conference room, I need a, you know, a display, and I need a conference microphone, and maybe something to control HVAC settings. Like, that's very sort of utilitarian, right, or utility focused. The difference, I think, by focusing on the experience first, as you do in software development, is to think about personas, which is exactly what you're describing, or user types. So who is going to be in this building? How are they going to potentially be interacting with technology as they move through this building? And so for us, walking through that process, so doing that day in the life of those different persona groups, is really important, because when you do, you can identify where are their touch points with technology in that process. And those touch points of technology really stand out and illuminate the ability to deliver a certain type of experience as they are sort of coming in contact with those different technology sets. So if you don't do that work, like you do exactly you described on software development, Sean, and I'm sure this might be the byproduct of bad software development, and you could educate me on that, is that you end up with this really fragmented set of systems that's not connected to this sort of end-to-end experience. And if we want people to feel that really rich, immersive smart building experience as an occupant, it has to be sort of, you know, conceptualized from end to end. And that, again, I think that's where we can, you know, as a design industry, design and construction industry, we can learn a lot from software development.
Yeah, definitely. Multiple systems, multiple parts adds complexity. And my experience with software development and connected to the user experience is engineers generally, and I'm gonna generalize here, they want their software to be known or experienced or seen, right?
Sure.
You want to see the alert, you want to feel it and touch it, whatever it is. And that may not always fit with the experience you want. Right. And so there might be maybe points where the software needs to be hidden and not interact. And there may be points where it needs to interact. One thing I wanted to touch on, because in terms of personas and roles, because maybe you can help educate me on this. Who actually says, I want to build a smart building? Is it the owner of the building? Is it the occupants of the building, a potential owner, the people buying or renting space in it? Because that will determine what the priorities are, right? In terms of that dilemma you mentioned in the beginning, is it to make the physical experience in the building better for the people going through it, or is it for me to save money?
Yeah.
Building owner. And so who gets to control those dials and make sure that they're dialed the right way for whomever it matters for? And I suspect it's often driven by money. If I want the experiences, because I'm going to charge a higher rent or a higher purchase price. But so how does that work? Who gets to control the dials and how do they get turned?
If you think about the commercial real estate market, there's a few, I think, I would say, user groups to think about in the answer to this question. And the first is obviously the development side and the property developers as owners. And in the with the initiative to develop a property that will be really marketable, that will attract, the type of tenants that they want to attract, the utilization of smart building technologies can help, and I do think motivates owners, at least owners that we work with, to invest in that type of infrastructure and those types of systems, because it attracts the type of tenants that they want. It meets the vision that they have for the property. But there definitely has to be an alignment there, to your point. They have to develop a vision for their property. And part of that, in our opinion, is the digital strategy associated with that vision. And that's all that sort of front-end planning. An important aspect to what we've seen happening in the market, though, John, is that there is a sort of shift in that there is a demand-side push from occupants in their expectations of what the experience in the built environment should be. And I think this is attributed to a few different areas. I think the easy thing that we hear is just it's a generational, piece, that new generation entering the workforce has different, lived experience with technology, has a different experience, expectation as a result. And certainly I think that's a factor.
Can you share a couple of examples? What do occupants expect in their smart building?
Yeah. So I think an easy example is just, the utilization of their mobile phone. And whereas in a typical environment, a typical office environment or typical built environment, utilization of your sort of personal device or your, work issued mobile device, it's not doing much for you as far as control of the built environment. I think what we're seeing now is the request for personalization, and that the desire to make, have more agency as an occupant, not only into the type of space that they can choose to go to. And you see this in building design now to try to provide more flex space for that, but also in the configuration of the environment to best suit their needs. And that can be, from a, HVAC, temperature control standpoint, it can be from a lighting, color temperature standpoint, it could be a sound standpoint. There are a lot of different elements that help occupants feel empowered to create their own personalized environment. And I think that's the most primary example of where we see a demand side increase from the occupant side to be able to utilize technology in a more meaningful way. The other area that we see it is in the of spillover from consumer technology, think of more of a consumer technology, into an expectation to be able to use that in a more professional sense. Something like voice control. We all see the rise in voice assistants, in US households, to speak about the US market specifically. And as consumers, and if you use this technology, Sean, tell me what you think. But as consumers, we become accustomed to using this technology in a way that makes us feel efficient. And we bring those expectations with us into the workplace. And so we see similar type requests. So, I want to book a meeting room. Why do I have to log on to my shared calendar and figure out what's available. Like, why can't I say, hey, you know, voice assistant, find me a meeting room next Wednesday at 1 o'clock for 10 people. So I think that there is a set of expectations that is driven by what we do in our, you know, in our personal life and as consumers, and the way in which our consumer experiences are so personalized today. That's really driving a lot of this shift and sort of demand side pressure on owners to change the experience that they're delivering in the built environment.
Nice. I love it. I'm glad I interjected there to get those examples. And it leads me to this point. Do you see investments being made to leverage technologies to make the space more inclusive? Because you mentioned temperature is one that hopefully everybody would understand and appreciate, but sound for different folks neurodiversity requirements for quiet places, less lighted places, things for mobility to enable folks to arrive and safely move around the building. So are you seeing technologies to make it smart in that sense as well?
Yeah, it's an important topic, Sean, because I think, and I appreciate you bringing it up, because when we think about smart buildings, we tend to think about the flashy stuff, you know, and there is an element of real value and function that technology can provide. And one way is in some of the areas that you're talking about. I think mobility is a great one. You know, technology can be a great enabler of mobility, you know, throughout a property, and a great support system, you know, for mobility throughout a property, as, you know, that's sort of tailored to the type of occupants that you have in a building. What I think is most important and what's exciting about the idea of using technology to support diversity, or, you know, I think wellness falls into this category, and engagement, is better utilization of data in the built environment. And, you know, from your background on the software side, you know, and technology side, you know that, you know, any business doesn't operate without really informed data sets. And so something we talk to our clients about all the time is that in their business at any given time, they have a lot of disparate data sources coming in, you know, market data, customer and supply chain, and, you know, all these data points that they are using to inform their most important decisions. And it's pretty remarkable, if you think about it, that in the built environment, we are at the Stone Age compared to that. You know, we have really very, very few building owners have access to the type of data that would allow them to make really informed decisions about utilization of their space, or, you know, how their occupants, you know, are moving through the space, or how they can better serve certain populations inside of their properties. And to me, a key part of a digital strategy is understanding how can we use data in a way that, you know, provides value to us as owners and provides value to occupants. And one way, for sure, I think that fits both sides, is the value in being able as an owner to make more informed decisions and being able to deliver, you know, a better experience as a result of those decisions to certain populations, or, you know, an entire occupant population in your property. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely does. Yeah, and I'm glad to hear that response. And so what I'm hearing, though, and I'd be remiss given our role that we play in the world of cybersecurity and privacy. Yeah. Once we realize the value of that data, that there is value, we want to start to generate it and collect it and analyze it and use it to make decisions. I'm wondering how you as designers and developers look at the systems and the data and say, this is how we want to treat that data. We respect it. I don't want to put your words in your mouth here, but do you respect it? Do you recognize that it has privacy challenges associated with it, depending on where it comes from and how it's generated? And kind of back to my point of who's turning the levers and the knobs, who gets to have access to that data and for what purposes? Is that part of the discussion as you're building this stuff out?
It absolutely is, Sean. Although I think in the industry, it's not as so prevalent as it should be especially in the early discussions on sort of project, you know, conception and planning and design. I think there's two important areas here. The first is privacy, which is what you asked about specifically. Yeah, as we collect data, and if you look especially at the type of real estate development happening a lot, you know, in the U.S. market today, which is the mixed use. So you have this combination of, you know, commercial space, retail, you know, or hospitality type space, maybe residential space. So you have this intermingling of personal and professional life, you know, naturally happening on a single property or sort of in a community of properties. And that presents a great opportunity in that data can help shape that experience in a really meaningful way. It can provide value. Also provides some risk in making sure that that data is respected, which is a great word that I think you use, and protected and used in a responsible way. One challenge I think that we see is that as an industry, you know, design community, construction, development community, data privacy has not been really part of our, you know, community ethos as an industry, because we have not, you know, the industry hasn't had access to this type of data and had to think about it in the design process or execution process on a property up until really the, you know, very recent history. I think the important piece on privacy is one that, you know, the owner recognizes first the value of data, because they're not going to invest to collect it if they don't recognize the value in it. And so I think that there's still some learning that's happening there, where owners are understanding, how can I do this? How can I do it that might help drive revenue, which they certainly is an exciting opportunity, different revenue opportunities. And then once they do understand the value of it and want to have the capacity to collect it and manage it, then to ensure they understand the responsibility that comes with that and what, you know, the sort of privacy implications are. I don't believe that this conversation is happening enough. Part of it, I will say, is driven by the lack of a good data management strategy on properties in general. And so what that means is, you know, again, as you can talk about from the software development side, you have a bunch of data that exists in, you know, several different places or disparate sources. And in that case, it's really not being utilized by the owner in a way that probably is meaningful or that they're driving revenue from. But there is a real sort of exponential rise we see in requests to do this. How can we sort of transform what we're learning here and the data that we're getting into something that's valuable for us as an owner? So I don't think that's the conversation is happening enough. I do think it is partly driven by, you know, the need for owners to learn more about what that means for them and become educated. And then once it does, it's an important responsibility of the design community and I think the vendor community, because there's a lot of engagement, you know, between design community, vendor, you know, OEM community around driving this conversation earlier on in the process. So as you know from the software development side, privacy, security has to be built into that entire stack. Otherwise, you know, you have so many vulnerabilities. And we will have the same problem and do have the same problem, you know, on the construction side if we're not really integrating it early on in the process. Yeah. So the long-winded answer, I apologize, but I think it's a complex issue facing our industry today and an important one.
Yeah, it certainly is complex, and your industry is not unique in its current standing.
Sure.
with an understanding and ability to grab it by the horns and really, really manage it closely and successfully. And even those that are fairly mature still have a hard time. So it's not an easy problem to solve. Hopefully this will help raise some awareness for some folks. What I want to do as we wrap up here, Todd, is maybe get your view for what you might see. What are you excited about? Let's put it this way: for the next few years, what do you see happening? Is it the rise of new buildings? Is it retrofit of old buildings? Is it just this whiz bang experience that everybody's clamoring for, and that's the next thing that the wave everybody wants to ride? What do you see that you're excited about over the next few years?
There are several things that I'm excited about. The most, I think, prominent driver of the change that we're seeing is that the pandemic has accelerated, several trends, I think, in the adoption of technology in the built environment. Many of those are related to security, and sort of a frictionless type experience and safety and wellness. So if we want people to come back, to the office environment, we have to sort of build a new level of trust and in making them feel safe in doing that. And technology is a key driver of that. So I do think the pandemic has accelerated the adoption of technology. But what excites me about this rise the most is to see the ownership and building performance stakeholder group and the occupant sort of community stakeholder groups more aligned in what they can do to have value on both sides of that equation in the built environment. And some of the things we talked about today, like better utilization of data to drive, more value to both occupants and owners, using tools that have been used for a long time in the IT industry, like data analytics and machine learning, using those to really drive sustainability and efficiency and better experiences. I'm really excited to see this digital transformation in the built environment happen. And I think, this idea of a real estate 2.0, commercial real estate 2.0 is happening. And I think it's really exciting to see that transformation happen, especially because the outcome of it is real value to both, owners, occupants, operators, community. So that's what I'm excited about.
I love it. And maybe what I'm hearing, and maybe this is a good summary and a good view for the future, is a lot of the trade-offs we've had to traditionally make, builder, owner versus occupant, efficiency versus experience, and I can go on and on and on, but a lot of those trade-offs become, the gap between them becomes less, right? They become closer together, and through technology and data and innovation, we can achieve more together.
Yeah, it's a great summary, Sean. And I think, a lens under which, our industry or anyone thinking about it can look at it is that technology is and can be an enabler of great experiences in the built environment. Experiences that are, driven by, health and wellness and efficiency and agency, and giving agency to occupants. I think technology's role is to be an enabler of that, and it can be when it's designed, and implemented correctly. And that is really exciting to shrink the gap that you described.
Well, Todd, I'm excited to see where you take things and how this industry progresses. And
thank you.
I have to say, I really appreciate your time and your insight here. And thanks for joining me.
Likewise, really grateful to have had the chance to join you and had a lot of fun today. So thanks, Sean.
Awesome.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Cyber Society Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.